Hello, it is May 10th, 2015. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 5.5 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I'm Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I do apologize for the delay. I hope everybody saw the brief update I gave last week. We should be back on schedule. Knock on... That's a desk. It's made of wood, hence the knocking on wood notion. Hopefully we'll be back on a regular discussion every Sunday with Allison Futter. We'll see how tech works out. I'm traveling next week, but we should still be able to fit one in. We're going to do it every time we can. So, but that said, we're trying to get back on schedule now. Also, as I've mentioned before, we will also have other podcasts in between this. But generally speaking, you should be able to count on, at least until next week, a weekly podcast with Allison Futter. I'm going to call it Futter and Leach. These are the Futter and Leach, you know, subsect podcasts. I don't know. Anyway, there's baseball going on. Bill Simmons has been fired from ESPN. The world is upside down. I have no idea what's going on. Anyway. So I'm going to talk to Allison about baseball because this is a baseball podcast starting today. And also, you know, I'm hopeful next week, by the way, because if you remember a while back, I had Tim Grierson, my friend Tim Grierson, who I do movie reviews with at Deadspin, and one of my best friends from high school in Matteson, Illinois. We did a big podcast about Breaking Bad. We previewed the last 8 episodes, then previewed the last one. I'm hoping to do that for Mad Men next week. My guest, I have to make sure that he or she is still down. But if that happens and that's still going on and he or she is able to do it, we will have a Mad Men podcast previewing the final episode of Mad Men because I'm old and white. So we'll have that this week. If not, I'll be back next week with Allison. But first off, don't worry about that yet, because now it's Allison Futter. You've hit like the 15-second forward button like 4 times already, and I do not blame you. All right, hello, Allison. Thank you for joining me. I think we're back on a regular schedule now, but of course this is always difficult too because you are always all over the place. So let's play my favorite weekly game. Where is Allison Futter? Where are you?
I am in San Francisco, California, where I would like to be a lot more.
Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it? I met you in San Francisco. You and I had never actually met, I think, until the World Series this year.
Oh my gosh, I think you're right.
Yeah,
actually, I think I met you in the parking lot at the Royals ballpark.
That's right. You were with Lindsey Barra, if memory serves.
Yes.
So, and you guys are both like you guys are both really smart and really established at MLB. So I think I was very nervous. Because, I always feel like, you know, the sports are the people I don't want to, like, mess with you guys. You guys, like, know what you're doing, and you guys are the real deal, and we're just, like, little nerds in the corner hoping nobody knows us. So I was very nervous meeting you guys. So
Well, you did it well.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I came up with a better excuse for why I ran into a ditch and started crying. But yes, you're right. That wasn't Kansas City. But I think we had a beer in San Francisco. I think that's
we did. We had a beer post game after a World Series game, right at that place, right outside the ballpark.
Yeah, World Series. It's funny. This last year was my third World Series I covered, and it was the first time I'd ever covered one that was on the West Coast. And I'd forgotten why media people love it when World Series are on the West Coast, because you can go drinking afterwards.
Yeah, you know, when it's on the East Coast, then you don't leave the ballparks until like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And it kind of takes all the fun out of it. But on the West Coast, the games start at a decent time. You're out at a decent time, and you actually can have a little bit of a normal life, which is nice.
Yes. So I want to talk about San Francisco. We're going to get into some baseball stuff going on because I have to talk to you about the Astros because I feel like I could talk to you about the Astros forever. It's fascinating. But we'll get to that in a moment. I want to talk about being in San Francisco as a general thing about San Francisco. I think San Francisco or Pittsburgh or Wrigley just because of the ambiance of everything. But those are the three baseball stadiums other than Busch Stadium, of course, which is, you know, where people ascend to heaven and they go to Busch Stadium. You knew that. Those three stadiums are the ones that I love the most. I think of all of them, I would probably end up landing on San Francisco just because it's San Francisco and it's such an incredible city. Is that your favorite stadium?
It is, yes. It's my favorite stadium. Well, okay, yes. It's definitely my favorite stadium because it's like the most beautiful place I've ever seen as far as just like the location of it. It's right on the water. You have McCovey Cove, you know, beyond right field. It's the most gorgeous setting. You cannot, you can't match the scenery that you get in this part of the country. I will say that Pittsburgh, though, it takes your breath away too, because when you're, especially when you're up in the press box where we are, which is like the very highest point of the ballpark, and you're overlooking beyond the outfield and you have like the downtown skyline, it's just amazing. And the three bridges, the three rivers, it's, and the stadium is magnificent. It is a flawless place in my opinion. So I would say that San Francisco and Pittsburgh are the best places to watch a baseball game, but San Francisco is like the best place to just exist, in my opinion.
Yeah. San Francisco, I used to not like San Francisco. I think it's because I was always there. It was before I was able to be in sports writing or entertainment writing or really writing about anything that I possibly cared about at all writing. I used to cover the financial services industry for Registered Rep magazine. Very poorly. I did not see the financial crisis coming. I'm sorry. I was a really bad business reporter. This was in like the early aughts. And so every time I was in San Francisco, I was always covering like some brokerage conference, some Charles Schwab conference. So I was always running around. And everyone enjoys San Francisco so much that they annoyed me because I was so busy at something I didn't like.
So, oh, that's a good point. Yes. Yeah, you didn't get to come here and have fun.
So now I'm with you on that. And it's funny because I feel like, you know, it is – I never actually get tired of that place. I've only been to Pittsburgh for two games before, and it's so it's made me appreciate Pittsburgh. But San Francisco is a place that, like, it just feels every single time I'm in San Francisco, I'm like, you know, I'm stupid for not living here. And then you realize what the price is on everything is. You're like, oh, that's why I don't live here.
Right, but you have to win the lottery first, and then you can move there. But, you know, like, I go to batting practice when I'm here, and, like, I'm just kind of around the Giants dugout, and I just start laughing because, I mean, I say to people, it's just like this every day. It's like this beautiful, you know, sunny day, 68 degrees, 72 degrees, whatever. And you get so used to it. And then you go to other places. That's really just the only drawback about Pittsburgh is just that it rains constantly in the spring. It rains a lot in September. You have double headers at the end of the year. I mean, coming from an Astros standpoint, you know, I was there three times a year, every year for 15 years. And while it was great, it was often, you know, sitting through 3-hour rain delays. And so the weather situation, that to me is, you know, the driving factor on whether or not you get excited to go somewhere.
I mean, it snowed in Colorado today.
Crazy. That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous. It's like May 10th.
Yeah, it's 90 degrees in Athens right now. I mean, the idea that it can snow somewhere that's actually in the 48 contiguous states is pretty insane to me. Okay, so now we got to talk about Houston. I have talked to you about Houston. This is an ongoing subplot. The problem for you doing this podcast with me is Houston is relevant, so I'm never going to let this go. Because for those of you that have not listened to Alice and I discuss this before, Allison has worked for the Astros and has been an Astros fan, and I think, you know, there's been some turnover, some upheaval, some change, we'll call it
right.
That.
Change is okay.
In Houston over the last years, of course.
Right.
Change is I'm not quite old enough to fear all change, just most change. But certainly Houston has gone through some change, different people in charge, different philosophies, so on. I think this is well documented. And I think it has led you, and I don't want to overstate this, but it's led you to have somewhat, you know, a push-pull, love-hate relationship with this team that you have worked for and loved. Now this team is not only good, but they're like, they're in a division that's really bad, and it's starting to look like they might actually win it. How do you feel?
Well, I'm warming on them, not because of the winning. I mean, it's all tied together, but it's not like I need them to be good in order to all
right.
of a sudden say that I like them again. I mean, I covered them more than I worked for them, but
I know.
Through all the years, I've covered, you know, 100 lost seasons, and I've covered pennants. Like, it's all whatever, but I was just suspicious of them because I didn't necessarily believe everything that they were saying about what their intentions were. And I felt that financially, that maybe they weren't going to be as, I don't know, that they weren't going to do exactly what they said they were going to do. But
and we still don't know that. And we still don't know that, right?
We like still don't know that. And the TV situation, I mean, they are back. They are on the air, and they do have a TV deal, and there are people who are, you know, running things and whatever. But What their payroll can be as time moves on is still in question. But the fact that they are trying to win has helped a lot. And they were not—they were absolutely not trying to win 2 years ago. And I found it very disconcerting that they were trying to pretend that they were trying to win. And they were also, like, charging a lot of money when good teams were coming in and calling it dynamic pricing. And I don't know. The whole thing just rubbed me the wrong way. I just felt that they were not being honest. But yeah, I definitely feel that they have really much better intentions right now.
But see, one could theoretically make the argument that, first off, they can't 2 years ago say, we're trying to lose and the tickets are a dollar. I mean, like theoretically, like, I understand, I agree from a fan perspective. Yes, that's really crappy. On the other hand, they really can't. Like, they can't just say 2 years ago, we're trying to lose.
No, they don't need to charge a dollar, but they jacked up their prices three times with the prices normally were for opening day. You know, the Yankees were in town, the prices were all of a sudden double. Like, it was just, you know, it was ridiculous. And people, of course, weren't coming to the games. But there was just also a lot of things that, maybe not everything that came out, but just a lot of stuff that I knew, having some background information that maybe wasn't exactly the way that they were portraying it to the public.
I'm trying very hard
to let it all go. And I keep bringing it up.
I'm sorry. I keep bringing it up.
You keep bringing it up.
I know. I'm sorry, because they're good. They're good, and that's the thing. Is I think an argument could be made that this success they're having now, and again, we'll see. We're not. We're only. You know. It's still just May 10th. May 11th, listeners. But I think you have to argue that there's some sort of indication. Like, clearly, if they hadn't have gone through what they went through for the last 3 years, they're not where they are right now. So you brought up a great point on Twitter that I thought was great about the notion that everybody thought that when they left the NL Central and went to the AL West, Houston was doomed, man. Like, the Central was the only way they were going to be able to hang in, and now they're in the West where the Texas is primed to be good for a long time. The A's are always good. The Angels have all this money. Seattle is very motivated. And now they're the only team in the division over 500. Do you think that is sustainable moving forward?
I mean, I don't know that it's sustainable for only one team to be over 500 for the season. I do think that the Angels are going to be a lot better. And I think the Mariners are going to be a lot better. But, yes, I mean, the thing is with the Astros that this isn't just completely because the other teams aren't that good. I mean, they have some very good ball players. What they don't have is enough pitching, but that can be addressed. They can be active at the trade deadline. You know, things can happen. And what I really think is going to happen is Carlos Correa is going to come up at some point this season, and I think they're going to be a really, really good team. I think that they have a very good chance to win this division, and it's not going to be like some, you know, crazy Cinderella story that everyone thinks it is. If you go from position to position, some good ball players on this team, and they were very active in the offseason just getting major league players, which they hadn't done, you know, 2 years ago. So I think that things are looking up for them.
Do you think, coming from the perspective of when they say they don't have money, or they haven't spent money, when I look at them, and I'm not the first person who brought this up, to me, Hamels could answer a lot of questions for them. Like, they obviously need pitching, and it's a, look, we'll spend some money. We'll spend some money for a thing that we really need. Do you see a matchup there? Do you think that would answer some of the questions that not just you specifically, but I think a lot of Astros fans that have been burned by the last few years, do you think that would address some of those issues, or do you think that would be foolhardy?
I mean, I have a different opinion about big, huge contract pitchers that are getting older. So those guys never excite me. How old is Cole Hamels these days?
I think he's 32, 33. I'll look it up.
He's got like four more years left on his contract. Right. I mean,
he's 31. He's 31, but he's got four more years,
Yeah, he's got four more years on the contract, and it's ridiculous amounts of money. And I just don't ever really feel that that's a necessary thing to do or even good for the team, and it can come back and burn you in two more years. And if you're, you know, a lot of teams will sign these free agents. I realize this would be a trade, but when you like sign a free agent pitcher for these ridiculously long contracts, it's to win that one World Series, and then you just sort of, you know, look at it as the cost of doing business to be stuck with the contract until the end. I don't think that the Houston Astros are in a position to be able to financially absorb that in three years and still maintain the payroll.
How do they help their pitching? Because that's
the
worst.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can do something that's a little bit of a lesser tier. I mean, yeah. I don't know that you need to go out and find an ace. Do they really need to win the World Series this year and, you know, go and get a Cole Hamels, give up some of their minor league talent, even though they have a pretty deep system? They've made a lot of trades. I mean, they've traded away three young starting pitchers over the course of one calendar year. Which I think it makes it a little dicey for the next couple of years. So I'm not so sure that they need to really give up a lot, but I think you could go out and get a kind of a middle of the rotation guy that might become available in July. I mean, we'd have to, kind of comb through and see what the trade market is offering. But yeah, I think that you can do a few things without having to go and get a Cole Hamels, but we'll see.
All right. So I'll wrap up with Houston on this. I'm gonna bring this up again, obviously, because I'm obsessed with this now. But I know that Allison Futter, that is to say you are a professional reporter, and you are very good at your job, and you work with InsideMLB.com, and you've been there for a long time, and you're very good at it, and you're an impartial observer of the world. I hope that there have been no inclination or no implication on my side that I am saying anything otherwise. But let's just all pretend there's a secret Allison Futter. That is going through this drama that I might actually just be imagining of getting back to Houston and getting back on the Astros and so on. Secret Allison Futter, what percentage is she leaning toward the Astros now? Leaning away? Is she at the 65? Is she at 45? Secret Allison Futter, that's not you. This is just a little person that lives in a brain of another person that looks just like you and talks like you and has your social security number. What percentage moving toward the I am happy when the Astros win, if is this theoretical person who doesn't exist?
I would say that it's around 57.
57, all right.
Yeah,
all right.
So it's over 50, but not close to 75.
Okay.
But
okay. All right, that's good.
I find myself getting a little more exasperated than I used to be at boneheaded plays or, tough outs. Just, things that, frustrate fans. I find that, individually I look at a lot of those guys, and individually I'm definitely pulling for the Jason Castros and the Jose Altuves, and, I want to see those guys do well. So
okay, we're going to call this person Nozyla. Because it's your name backwards. It's going to be Nozyla. We're going to refer to her as Nozyla. That's who that person is. I'm going to ask how Nozyla's feeling. That's going to be our shorthand from now on. We're going to ask how Nozyla's feeling. And also, thank you for having a name that actually is legible when you say it backwards.
It's Nozyla.
So, okay. So, one other thing. As we speak, because then I want to preview the rest of the week. As we speak, there is Kansas City and Detroit are playing on ESPN. Now, I wrote about this when I wrote a column for MLB.com, for Sports on Earth, I think was on MLB.com a little bit, about the StatCast game, that first StatCast game where I believe it was the Cardinals. It was the Cardinals playing, I forget, but the Cardinals playing Washington. They were playing Washington. And StatCast is part of, MLB, is part of BAM and something they've been working on for a long time. And Corey Schwartz. I know Corey Schwartz. I think Corey is a genius, and I'm excited about all the stuff that they're doing. And other than the fact that it felt like Bob Costas really kind of only cared to be like, well, what could this tell us about Willie Mays?
Right.
Why would Willie Mays need a computer? I feel like he wasn't necessarily...
That's relevant.
Yeah, I wasn't sure Bob was quite selling it the way that StatCast should be sold. So, but generally speaking, for me, I find it exciting. I like my favorite of all the StatCast things is the perceived velocity. So I feel like that totally makes sense. Like, what do I care if it's actually 93 miles an hour? I want to know what it looks like. And if it looks like 98, that's I don't need the other. I don't care how fast it's actually going. I don't care how fast it looks like it's going. So I'm into StatCast. And I was wondering, because I was worried about it. And the reason I was worried about StatCast was because, and this is my main topic, I hate the K-Zone graphic on ESPN. It makes me unhappy. And I think the reason it makes me unhappy is not that it's right or that it's wrong. But the thing I don't like about StatCast is it gives you an idea of what's actually happening. It gives you a view of how far that guy had to travel to get the ball, or how hard the ball was hit, or how the spin on the pitch. It actually gives me a view of baseball that I don't have otherwise. The K-Zone exists literally to make me unhappy every pitch. Because
it gets in your way because it's like annoying to look at?
No, it's not even so much that. It's actually not so much that it's annoying to look at. It's a little distracting, but that's okay. StatCast is a little distracting too, and you just get used to that. All K-Zone tells you, at least what it claims it tells you, is whether a pitch was a ball or a strike. Now, maybe you believe it, maybe you don't. But when I'm watching a game live, I no longer, like you and I have watched hundreds upon thousands of baseball games in our lives. And there is a rhythm of pitching. There's a rhythm of the way it works. There's a rhythm of how this game is called. There's a rhythm of when you're watching the game. All, like, if I, particularly for the team I'm watching, if I care about is playing, the Cardinals. I don't know if you knew that. But if the Cardinals are playing and the Cardinal guy is batting, if a pitch is called a strike, that's a ball, I'm now angry. Like, that's an emotion that I suddenly have out of this game, is anger. If there is a pitch that's called a ball that should have been a strike, then I have guilt. Then I feel like I've been cheated somehow. Like, somehow I've gotten this thing that I don't deserve. Neither one of those emotions are things that I want to feel every single pitch of a baseball game.
And that's a very good point.
And that's my problem with the K-Zone. It's not that it's inaccurate. Or though it may be, I have no idea. Like when you talk to the MLB people and they talk about all the cameras they had to put into place and everything they had to do to make StatCast work, and then ESPN's like, we got this computer thing, it works, trust us, and which is kind of what they do. And but regardless of that, it is that idea that like it doesn't actually. It's frankly very ESPN. It's the you're either this way or you're this way. If you disagree, you are angry now. It is this black and white anger, non-subtlety thing that now is a part of the game for me, every single one of those games. So I'm not alone in this. I've noticed a K-Zone, anti-K-Zone contingent growing, and I just had to get it out there that it drives me crazy because it brings emotions to the table that I don't want at the table. Am I crazy with this? Do you feel this way or not?
No, I think you're right, because when I think about it in those terms, I'm thinking about like just watching the game today. I was just watching the Giants and Marlins play. And so, you know, you do like the little grunts when, you know, it's a ball like right in the corner. You're like, ooh.
Right.
And then exactly. You kind of like don't want anybody to ruin that for you. You're like, I need to do my grunting and then move on to the next pitch. I really don't need it explained to me in your little boxy terms. And the other thing is, how do we really know if this is representative of the umpire's actual strike zone? How does it help to help you see it? I mean, are they so arrogant that they think that their graphics could possibly be the same as what the umpire is looking at when he's like 7 inches away from the pitch coming over the plate? So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you don't need the angst, and you don't need. I don't know if I would feel guilty if it was a call that went for my team and that shouldn't have.
It's not,
but
maybe
yeah, I did a quick like internet search as soon as you emailed me that we wanted to talk about this topic, and wow, the anger and the bitch is off the charts with the people that are watching, and they're like, no, we're going to stick with it all season long, and we think this is the greatest thing, and it's so ESPN.
Yeah, it is, and the ESPN part is, there's stubbornness with ESPN, which is fine, whatever, like, stubbornness is, I sometimes admire stubbornness, and I tend to admire stubbornness when people are being stubborn about something I agree with, and then I hate it when they're stubborn about something I don't agree with, so I think criticizing them for being stubborn, I don't want to do that. As much as it is this idea that ESPN inherently polarizes everything, and now they've done it on every pitch of a baseball game. Like, it's turning into, and maybe guilt is the wrong way to put it. Maybe, like, I don't know if I'm like, oh man, we didn't even earn that strike. Like, I don't know if it's so much that as much as, like, I feel like a cheer, like, if I cheer a called third strike that actually wasn't a strike, I feel like, I don't, it's a complicated feeling that I don't want from my baseball game.
And I think it's fair to the umpires. And, you know, I'm not like an umpire apologist, but I certainly, well, actually I am. I'm an umpire apologist because I feel like they have a very tough job. And seeing things from the perspective that they're seeing and the responsibility they have and the split second reaction that they have, you know, I just don't think it's really fair to, I mean, what they're basically doing, ESPN is basically just trying to call them out for every single call that they may not get right.
I would love to, on a future podcast, talk to you about umpires. Then we can get into this very briefly, because I could not agree with you more. I feel like in this world, everybody has a defender. Everybody, there's always a, I think the hashtag that people use about this is, well, but actually. Like, everybody's got a defender. Even if someone says something horrible, there's always that one guy that's like, well, but actually, you know, what he's really saying, it's about ethics and gaming journalism or whatever. And there's always a defender, everyone, except for umpires. Umpires are this thing that we've all, umpires are refs in football or officials in, or whoever. We have, for whatever reason, the amount of malevolence that we attach to umpires, particularly in the replay age, which I think we're starting to see some of the side effects of replay a little bit. I think we're starting to, it's not so much the delay as much as the times where we're starting to realize that, you know what, sometimes replay doesn't give you actually a definitive answer, definitive answer that we want. And maybe we just spent 3 minutes going, well, I guess we can't know everything. And we learned that lesson on a regular thing. But more to the point, umpires to me, like, these are people who are away from their family, if they have a family, because it's a really difficult thing for them to do, to be on the road all the time.
Yeah, they don't have home stands.
Yeah, like, yeah, they are constantly on the road. It's funny because, like, you know, one of the things, I talked to an umpire once who was talking about one of the things that they liked about replay is that now one of the rotations is New York, but you don't have to go and get yelled at every night. Because one of the umpire rotations is to sit in the replay booth. And there's an extra spot where, like, you get to go to New York an extra day a year and sit in a room and not get screamed at. And like, eat deli sandwiches, you know?
Sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it sounds like probably the respite of their week. But, like, that's the thing about these guys is that, like, these people are away all the time. They don't get paid a lot of money. They're often deep. Maybe I read, this is from reading Ron Luciano's, remember the old umpire, Ron Luciano, who wrote The Umpire Strikes Back? He wrote these books in the 80s that were very funny. It was very, he had a very sad story. But they were very funny, and they were all kind of, like, they're all kind of good humored about what it is to be an umpire, to be this person that is anonymous and screamed at no matter what by everyone.
Right, exactly.
And
people are waiting for them to mess up.
Yeah, and they do this because they love baseball. Like, that's why they do it. And, like, to me, like, those guys, like, they're on my side. They think getting yelled at is, like, the best job in the world because they get to be at a baseball game every day. We should be loving these people.
Yes. Yes, I feel that they have a very tough job, but you know what people I think don't understand is that the managers really respect these guys, and actually there are friendships that go on, you know, between managers and umpires. I know that one now retired manager was very active in helping a lot of umpires that had fallen on hard times later in life. There's a lot of respect between the two, and the thing with the replay is a lot of them like it because they want to get the calls right.
Right.
And it became a point where, you know, with the ballparks and the crazy configurations from ballpark to ballpark, and it was hard to tell what was a home run, and you know, it was very standard 20 years ago and not so much anymore, but they really do want to get it right, and they're really very good at what they do, and I think we're seeing that they do often get it right. But no, I think that they, you know, they take the abuse, it's part of the game, but I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah, I mean that's what we do with umpires, is basically that, like, if they get it right, good, that's what you're supposed to do, you jerk.
Right.
And if we get it wrong, we assume that they're throwing the game for gamblers or something. We're like, we're so mean to umpires. So all you umpires are listening, and you shouldn't be listening because you should be staying impartial and not paying any attention to crazy Cardinals fan me and crazy Astros fan Nozilla. I can't remember how to say it right. Nozilla, whatever. We'll figure it out. Don't listen to us because we're biased. You should be unbiased umpires. Okay, the last thing I want to do on this podcast every week is look forward to the games the week ahead, and also note where we are in the season. If the season ended today, because I love this, I always love doing the way the season ended today. If the season ended today, we would have your wild card game would be, depending on what happens to this Detroit-Kansas City game, I don't know what the score is right now. It hasn't started yet, so let's just pretend Kansas City wins. So it is Tampa Bay at Detroit in the wild card game, and the winner would play, I believe it would be Houston, and then Kansas City would play at the Yankees. That would be so Kansas City, the Yankees, and the Detroit, Tampa Bay winner at Houston. And in the National League, the wild card game would be San Diego at Washington, and the winner would play St. Louis, and then the other would be Los Angeles and the New York Mets. I'm sure none of that will change at all at any of this week.
Yeah, you could pretty much just mark that one down. The Astros are going to have home field advantage
throughout the playoffs. I love that idea. Yes. I love that. Of course. Listen, I've never been to Enron, so you know I just called it
Enron. That's beautiful.
It's Enron forever, man. I'm firm of the belief. You sign a 30-year contract, you got to stick to that name forever.
That's like when Riverfront Stadium became Synergy Field. I never once referred to it as Synergy. Oh. It was Synergy Field for like 10 plus years, and I always referred to it as River. It will always be Riverfront Stadium to me.
Oh, yeah, and I think that, like, you know, there are people that still, like, I call it the same that you're at right now. I called it AT&T at one point, and people are like, it's Pac Bell. You know, or whatever that, you know, they like that people have to get stuck with names for a long time. I don't think anybody else calls it Enron except for me, because I really do believe, like, if you accept money from those if you ever accepted money from those people, you should have been stuck with that name for 30 years. It's hard to imagine. That's like Enron is like the worst company of the last 100 years, and it was the name of the stadium. I'm sorry. You should be stuck with that for 30 years.
Okay, but can I just tell you a really funny story?
Yes.
So Enron goes belly up, and it's like this crazy news story, obviously, and everyone is in complete shock. And I go into the offices, and I was like, okay. And I said to all the office people, we need to go and take pictures of ourselves in front of the Enron field signs, because these babies are coming down.
Like tomorrow.
And nobody had told us that. And so like 10 of us just ran around the entire ballpark and took pictures in front of every Enron field sign. And I kid you not, the very next day, they were taking the signs down.
That is fantastic. Are you serious? That is an amazing story. Now I am definitely calling it Enron forever. There's no doubt. That is fantastic. Oh, I'm so glad you told me that. I can't believe I haven't even asked you about that before. That is wonderful. Okay, so I feel like the two key series of the week, unfortunately, are both New York-related series, which I hate doing. But in the National League, I find the Cubs are hosting the Mets this week, which I think is a really fun series. It's just because the Cubs, whatever the Cubs do, is inherently kind of fascinating right now.
Yeah.
And I do feel like eventually the Nationals are going to take control of that division, and I think the Cardinals are in good shape in the Central, and I think the Dodgers are in good shape in the West, which means these are going to be two of the teams fighting for the wild card all year. So I'm really excited about that series. And I like the idea in the American League, it's Yankees Tampa Bay, and I still keep thinking the Yankees are going to completely fall apart, but I think it might be time to, like, the last 2 years I thought the Yankees were so much worse than their record. I think maybe it's time to give Joe Girardi a little bit of credit. Like, they're always a little bit better than they're supposed to be. The Yankees should be this entire disaster right now. And not only are they not, they've got a 3-game lead.
Yeah, no, I don't really know if there's an explanation, because I just felt like they were all getting old and injured together.
Yeah.
I mean, like 2 years ago, I remember the Yankees were in Houston for the last series of the year. And, like, there were all these, like, superstar named players that were in the clubhouse just hanging out because they were all in the DL. And it just seems to be the case. I don't know. I just feel like the other teams of the division just haven't really gotten going yet. And I don't believe that the Red Sox are this bad. I think the Orioles are going to be pretty good. But I just can't see that the Yankees sustaining with the roster that they have. But certainly, you're right. I mean, Joe Girardi is able to squeeze every bit of life that he can get out of them. I just don't know that they can continue on this pace.
American League MVP Alex Rodriguez. Oh, it's on. It's on. You and I are going to have an A-Rod conversation later, point too, because I love him. I'm so happy for him. I want him to hit 70 homers this year.
Oh, I don't even... Okay, I don't understand this, and I'm not like this curmudgeon-y, like, media person.
I
don't understand how we are to believe that he's clean. He has never failed a drug test, and it's basically the understanding that he's been on some kind of performance enhancing drug his entire career, and he's never failed a drug test. I don't understand why we're all like now not questioning this. How are we not questioning this?
Well, maybe, but for what it's worth, you could go the other direction and say, you know what? He's never actually failed the drug test, so maybe we're being presumptuous, assuming that he's actually been taking these his entire career. Like, for what it's worth. For what it's worth,
that can go both ways.
But let's not get an A-Rod argument because that's a future podcast. Because
I think it's weird though. Okay, don't you think it's weird that of all these bitter old sports reporters that have been around forever and hate everyone, that now all of a sudden they're not trying to call A-Rod out for still being on something?
I think they're just everyone like, come on.
They're like, oh, Renaissance, resurgence. Look at A-Rod. It's
honestly,
like,
honestly, the best thing that could have happened to A-Rod is the Yankees being jerks about that bonus. I feel like that was the best thing, because that's such a slimy move. Whatever your thoughts about A-Rod, to like claim that you can't market that which is ridiculous for crying out. Of course, like the claim that like they signed a contract saying they would give him $6 million for like for every time he passed, he had a home run marker. To claim now that it's not a milestone. I have to, regardless of what you think of A-Rod, whatever you think he was on drugs or not, or whether you think he's a horrible person or not, I think the best thing that could have happened to A-Rod is, like, that, it required that to get sympathy for A-Rod. And also, A-Rod is finally got someone in charge of his PR to be like, just say, I'm just trying to play baseball. And then shut up! And then shut up, right. And that's the best thing that could have happened. So I feel like, Go ahead.
No, I think it would have been cool if he would have like come out and said, you know, I'm going to donate before he hit the home run. When I get this milestone, I'm going to donate all of that bonus money to, you know, X charity just to see what was there. Yeah.
That would have been awesome, actually. That would have been kind of amazing. That's a brilliant idea. Why didn't anybody do that? And that's an excellent idea. Good thing. I'm curious if they would have paid it then. Hope Week. The Yankees always have a big Hope Week where they help all these New York communities out. That would have been a really funny thing. I'll give it to the Hope Foundation, and then see if they pay the money then.
Yeah, because he doesn't need it, so it would just be like he would still be putting them in a terrible position. Yeah. He would be. I mean, he'd win that. He would absolutely win that.
But that said, I kind of like now that like. Well, I think another reason that A-Rod's getting good press now too is he's just like he's not doing anything A-Rod-y. Right now, right. Like he's not doing anything stupid. He's not all of his interviews are. He's finally answering questions like Jeter. It took him like 15 years, but he's finally answering questions like Jeter. So like, you know, I feel like that's another reason. And frankly, he's hitting the ball well, and the Yankees are winning. And it was very strange to me to see a lot of people respond when he broke the record, and Yankees fans gave him a lot of applause. It was very strange to me, like, well, why are Yankee fans applauding? Well, I don't know. Guy in Yankee uniform hit home run that helped team win by one run. That's probably why they're applauding.
I just look at it like, he just learned how to be, you know, contrived and massage his image and come up with all the things that he needed to say to get everybody to like him. And it's all phony anyway, so I don't have much patience for that.
All of it's phony. All of it's phony, for crying out loud. But we don't know. We won't focus too much on A-Rod because we'll go down the rabbit hole. And we can talk about this a lot more because I'm feeling A-Rod is not going away. So
never going away. He's like the festering wound that will never go away.
Hey, blame the Yankees for signing him for a 10-year contract. If he would have been gone from baseball last year. If they hadn't signed for those extra 3 years. So you can blame them. As always, I think one thing everyone can agree on, just blame the Yankees. That's easy. Just blame the Yankees for everything. For everything that's wrong, including global warming. All right. Allison, thank you for chatting with me. We're going to try to do this again next Sunday. But I'm trying to come up with a good... Because I'm still doing occasional, I'm hoping this week to do a Mad Men last episode podcast with someone. So don't feel like you have to carry the whole weight here. But I'm trying to come up with, a name for our special podcast. Obviously, it would be Footer and Leech, because you have to go first.
You can go first. It can be Leech and Footer. You're the international superstar.
I've never even... I only got a podcast, a passport, 3 years ago. So I'm not international anything. But I went to Montreal once. Some baseball stadium. That's how international I am. And secondly, but no, I feel like, you know, I want to. We'll figure out if anybody has a good name. Just drop us a line. But mostly, Alza, I'm glad we got this going. I'm glad your tech difficulties are out of the way. You always sound strong, but now audio wise, you sound strong. You sound good.
I appreciate that, and I look forward to the day that we start talking about Pete Rose. If you really want to get me fired,
I don't know. I think you and I are on the same side on Pete Rose. I think we might be on the same side on Pete Rose.
We are on the same side as Pete Rose.
Well, good. That'll be great. That'll be so much fun. Then we'll just. Well, I mean, we're going to do one of these before the All Star game, and that's what the whole All Star game is going to be about this year. It's going to be the worst. Ugh, I'm already depressed. All right, Allison, thank you. Everyone, follow Allison Footer on Twitter at Allison Footer, AlysonFooter, and we have to set up a. Nose aisle. No. Why can I not say it? I'm just gonna type it out.
Spell my alter ego.
Nosyla. Nosyla. That we're gonna come up with a Twitter account of Nosyla's secret joy and despair on how the Houston Astros do. I'm looking forward to Nosyla becoming more popular than you and I have ever imagined. All right, Allison. Have a wonderful time in San Francisco. You'll be back in Houston next week, right?
I will.
All right. Well, have a wonderful time. Enjoy the rest of that. Are you overlooking the field right now? Are you still in the press box? You're actually looking at it right now?
I'm in the press box.
Oh God, I'm looking at like
it's pretty here.
I'm looking at like my kids' diapers. Ugh, you win. All right. Have a wonderful. I guess you would win if you were looking at literally anything other than just San Francisco Stadium. But have a wonderful time. Have a great time, and I'll talk to you next
week. Thank you, Will. Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you, everyone. This is the Willie Experience Podcast, Footer and Leech Edition. Music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Hope they'll be back this week with the Mad Men Podcast. Otherwise, I'll talk to Allison next week. Be safe, everyone.